The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, happy Thursday to you, and welcome to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of ASU women's basketball. What else have I got going on these days? Phoenix Rising FC Stadium announcer. I picked up a new gig since you and I visited last. I'm doing the little pregame show. It's not a little pregame show. It's actually pretty big. Pre- and postgame for ASU football, which seems to be an incredibly popular topic at the moment in this town. So I'm here. Brad's not here, which is okay. The rest of the crew's here. We're all in good shape. And we thank you for joining us this morning on Sports360AZ.com. And we partner with AZCentralSports.com. And we are thrilled to be with you on a Thursday on a very busy day. It's that time of year where everything's going in eight different directions. You also got a hockey team, I think, that's in camp right now. So it's all going on at the moment, and we'll cover a lot of it. It's Thursday. We have our weekly visit with Pedro Gomez, ESPN Major League Baseball insider, and we'll obviously talk about the struggles of the D-backs who finish up their series at the Rockies today in Denver. And we'll take kind of a big-picture look at the D-backs, and I'll explain why in a minute. Bill Goody-Koontz will join us for his weekly visit. AZ Central Gannett chief film and media critic has a preview of a movie that was really, I don't know how to describe it the way I watched it as the stuff they sent me. But Bisbee 17 is, if you think it's just a historical film or a documentary, you're going to get fooled about 10 seconds after you sit down in the theater. And it's a very haunting film, and I'll let Bill explain why coming up in his segment. Bill and I are also going to talk about something that we both agree with. The Monday Night Football TV crew stinks. You heard it, stinks. And I have a lot of thoughts on it. We'll share them with Goody. I don't want to rip people, but I have a real problem with what ESPN is trying to do. And whatever they're trying to do with Monday Night Football, they are failing miserably. And Goody kind of feels the same way. We'll talk about it coming up on the show later this morning. Eric Sorensen does join us. Even when Brad's not here, Eric maintains his steady position at the helm of things, all things Sports360AZ.com.
It's nice to see you. How are you?
I'm well, and I just forgot. I meant to get out on social media and mention that I'm here. I will during a break. Does that qualify?
Fine.
Okay. There you go. I'm sorry. I forgot about that. My mind's been in, like, ever since I took on this football gig, my days are like, it's going everywhere.
Our director of social media already put out the tweet this morning.
So okay. Well, I'll do one as well.
I just made up that position, our director of social media.
Would that be you?
We don't have one.
Okay,
we all do it.
That's all right. Let's get to what's going on in the world of sports, and it's brought to you by Sagicor. Now, I know that Brad talks quite often about, even if you're just starting out with a family, you've got to be thinking down the road. And as a guy who is not starting out with his family, my kids are adults. I'm awfully glad that I took the steps very early on to make certain that they were secure in case something happened to me. Now, why Sagicor now? Well, these people obviously are specialists at setting up plans that not only fit into your budget, but give you something that you really can't put a price on, and that's peace of mind. So if you haven't started planning for, you know, things that you hope don't happen, I would suggest you make a call and contact Sagicor now, because they really are excellent at providing you and your family with peace of mind. What can you say about the D-backs? They go to the bottom of the ninth inning, leading the Rockies 4-3. Gerardo Parra gets an infield single, is sacrificed by Charlie Blackmon to second. Now, I'm going to stop right there and tell you, I was really surprised, even though they were down a run and they needed a run to tie the game, that they had Blackmon sacrifice. He's such a great hitter. But, you know, you can understand why. There's nobody out in the inning. If there was one out, I think Blackmon obviously would have swung away. But he sacrifices. The next man up is DJ LeMahieu. Hirano is on the mound. He started the inning for Arizona. Did he not? Did he not start the inning, E? I thought Archie Bradley had finished out the eighth, but I don't think they sent him out there for the ninth. I could be wrong.
I'm not sure.
I double check it.
I was following the game, but I wasn't watching the game, if that makes sense.
The funny thing, I was too. I was not watching the game. I was following on Gamecast. And the funny thing is, to me, I don't know if this is funny or not, but I'm looking here on MLB.com, and every time I go to the play-by-play thing that you can dissect the plays for you, it always blanks out. And I don't know if that's just an attempt on somebody's part to keep you from seeing what took place. In any event, DJ LeMahieu, a walk-off home run. The D-backs lose to the Rockies 5-4. They're back to 3.5 games behind the Rockies in the NL West, and they're now 4 games out of the second wild card spot. They finish that series this afternoon in Denver, and when you consider the fact that their next 6 games after today are 3 at Houston and 3 at home with the Cubs, I would dare say that, and I think this is the understatement at least of the last half hour, the D-backs are in a must-win situation today. They have to win that game. And I don't Clay Buchholz will go for the D-backs. So you do like your chances in a game like that. We'll talk with Pedro Gomez about what we think may or may not happen to this organization after the season, depending, of course, on how things finish out. Big football weekend, the Cards and Rams Sunday in Los Angeles. The Rams took them a little while to get rolling Monday night against the Raiders, but they had a big win. And I guess, Eric, most of the concern about the Cardinals at this point is how they figure out how to find their way from where they are to that end zone down at the other end of the field.
Yeah, and if they can only score 6 points against the Redskins, now you're going to L.A. to play the Rams. Let's hope they had a good week of practice.
Yeah.
Because they're going to need to bring their A game. I know that's an overused cliche, but you know how many teams make the playoffs that start 0-2.
It ain't
like,
many.
Very few.
Very few. You know, they move the E-box around a lot. Now you're up here.
That's where I always
good.
Am.
Oh, that's true. Okay, now we've talked about Cards Rams. Let's talk about the college scene. I don't want to talk about the U of A. Not just because they're 0-2, but who are they playing?
Southern Utah. Out of the big sky?
They better win. They better win. ASU San Diego State is another. I think this game Saturday night down at San Diego County Credit Union Stadium, the artist formerly known as Qualcomm, has the possibility of looking an awful lot like the Michigan State game last Saturday, in the sense that these are two teams that pay an awful lot of attention to defense. They're both very good at defending the run. You're talking about ASU. I don't know if people noticed, but they're ranked number one in the nation in run defense. And that includes that game with Michigan State, a team that wants to run the football a lot. San Diego State has some talent at the running back position, and they're going to be starting a backup quarterback because their starting quarterback sprained his knee last week and is going to be gone for about a month, maybe a little more. So you would anticipate that Rocky Long's team is going to really concentrate on running the football just to get that backup quarterback, who is a junior. Sometimes you say backup quarterback, you automatically assume, oh, got to be a freshman, got to be a sophomore. No, the guy's a junior, just hasn't played in a lot of games. So I would anticipate that San Diego State will work very hard to establish the run. And I think it'll lead to another low-scoring game. And I'm going to have some thoughts later on in the show about something that Herm Edwards said this week in his media press conference. And Rocky Long said some things along the same lines that really kind of take a big-picture look at where football is as a game. And so many people were surprised at the way Herm Edwards was able to manage the clock in the last 5 minutes of that game on Saturday night, including the people I work with. I remember Jeff Van Rapphorst was saying this is a very NFL approach to getting into position to kick the field goal to win the game. And I'm right. I was a little taken aback when he said it, but he's right. It's a very NFL-like approach to winning the football game. But it does speak to something I think that is I see a growing trend in football, and I'll talk about it a little bit later on in the show.
Money, not to interrupt you, but you know what? One of the best parts of college football is it's a roller coaster. Because
yeah.
If you and I 2 weeks ago would have sat here and said, "Okay, let's kind of try to dissect these first 2 weeks," me personally, I would have said they're going to beat UTSA, but it's going to be a close game. And they're probably going to lose to Michigan State,
right?
That was a pretty common theme, but instead ASU completely flipped the script. They blew out UTSA, And they took it to San Diego State. You and I talked for the show. That was a game, in all honesty, Michigan State should have won.
Yeah, they were in position to win.
They were. But ASU took the game, and that is so refreshing to see ASU. The window was small, and they jumped through it, and they won a big game, and now they're the nationally ASU has some buzz, and it's not just because Herm Edwards used to work at ESPN. It's because this is a top 25 team two weeks into the year.
Yeah. I know our time is short before the break. Let me put you on the spot and ask you a question. Is what you just said, is it in a way a critique of the previous coaching staff?
No doubt. I mean,
the head coach, basically.
Well, look what happened last year against San Diego State. ASU rolled in. They're playing a Mountain West school that they should beat, and they got run over. They looked uninspired in that game. Saturday, ASU will not look uninspired taking on San Diego State.
I agree with you. The reason I bring that up is, as I mentioned, one of the duties I have is I host the call-in show after ASU games. And last Saturday, I was surprised, greatly surprised, at the first two callers tried in a left-handed sort of way to take digs at Todd Graham. And the thing that surprised me about that was he's not here. If you're not happy with him, here's the late-breaking news into our newsroom. He's not here. And yet still, the first two people who called the show, the biggest thing to them about that win Saturday night was Todd Graham didn't coach the team. Now, I didn't say that verbatim, but you could just read between the lines of what they were saying. And I was really surprised because I thought, I knew he had his critics, but I didn't think that there was this amount of venom toward him amongst the fan base. And the two callers that I speak of, and there were a couple of people the week before after the UTSA game, same thing. Oh, it's better, this, that, and I didn't like it under the previous regime. It's like, wait a minute, where were you the last 5 years? You wait until now to get it out of your system? Anyway, we'll see what happens Saturday night. But up next, baseball talk with Pedro Gomez from ESPN. Glad to have you with us on a Thursday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com. We partner with azcentralsports.com. Back on a Thursday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, I'm Jeff Munin for Brad. You obviously know who you are, and we also know who Pedro Gomez is. He's ESPN's MLB insider. First of all, Pedro, where are you?
I am actually in Ahwatukee today.
Well, good for you. That's home.
Yes, it is.
Nothing wrong with being at home.
I might be in New York early next week for a different assignment, but we'll see. Still waiting to hear if that happens.
Baseball related, or can you say?
Yeah, no. It's baseball. I'm trying to do something with the Red Sox. They're going to be at Yankee Stadium Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then already been told that pack my bags for October because I'll be all over the place.
So. Yeah, and you probably won't be spending much time at Chase Field, and I'll get to that in a second. I got to get one question in. My buddy's a Cub fan. Yes or no? Should the Cubs fans be panicking?
I don't think so. I think when you look at the National League, there's no powerhouse. There's nothing even remotely close to the American League. But if you had to pick one, I would say the Cubs are probably the best roster. Milwaukee's playing some good baseball, but I think the Cubs, if they can somehow get the back end of their bullpen in a little bit of order, I think that's the team to beat in the National League.
I've been saying that since opening day, and he just won't listen to me. But maybe now that you've said it.
That's what a Cub fan does.
Yeah, that's what they do. We could go into great detail about what has troubled the D-backs. Obviously, a lot of it has to do with the bullpen, and I guess the ironic part of all this, Pedro, is that was the one area I think they focused on the most at the trade deadline was strengthening the bullpen, and it turns out that at the moment, and I underline that, that's where the weakness of this club is.
Without a doubt, Jeff. It's almost, in watching last night's game and watching some of the recent train wrecks, I guess you'd call them, it almost gets to a point where it becomes psychological. And I've talked to players before who have had gone through similar situations, and it's so disheartening when a bullpen starts to implode on almost a nightly basis, because the rest of the team feels like, oh God, here we go. How's it going to happen tonight? And I'm not saying they will it, But when you start to have those kind of negative thoughts, you're just waiting for something bad to happen. And that's kind of what is going on right now. And it's not, you know, unique to the D-backs. This is any major league club that has gone through anything similar feels the exact same pangs that these guys are feeling right now. And it's just, it's a bad, bad place to be in.
Yeah, and we've seen it a lot over the years in baseball. Now, Bob Nightingale tweeted out last night after the game that, in his opinion, the Rockies are now the team to beat in the West. And the only reason I'm not getting on board with that is that all three of these contenders in the West have had moments where they just, I mean, the Dodgers lose 2 or 3 at Cincinnati. I don't think anything's decided yet. Do you?
No, but I would say that in semi-backing up Bob, I would say that it's down to the Rockies and the Dodgers at this point. I just think that the Diamondbacks are in a bad, bad place, and with only a few weeks left in the season, it's really difficult to try to rebound. You know, there's only a little over 2 weeks left, and to be able to rebound from the type of catastrophic losses that they've had is really, really difficult.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Pedro Gomez is ESPN's MLB insider, and he joins us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. All right. And again, you know, mathematically, they're still in it. But let's take the assumption for the moment that it doesn't turn out well and they don't make the postseason. There has been an assumption that at that point, the D-backs organization, Ken Kendrick, Derek Hall, Mike Hazen, would have to commit to starting a rebuild. But even if Patrick Corbin, as expected, and A.J. Pollock walk as free agents, you look at that roster, Pedro, and then you look at the West and you say, are they really that far away that they just have to say, okay, we have to assume that it's time for us to just kind of take a step back for a while? I think is there an argument to be made, not so much that they need to go out and get aggressive in free agency, and they don't have a farm system anymore, really. But if you look at that 25-man, you think to yourself, are they really that far away? Going into next year, obviously, not knowing all the things that could happen at the winter meetings, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for an organization like this that truly has never gone the route of the White Sox or the Astros in years past, of just saying, you know what, we're just going to completely cash in and go for the all-out rebuild. This is an organization, especially, you know, even whether it was Jerry Colangelo or Ken Kendrick running, has never gone that route. So I would find it difficult to believe that they would just say, screw it, let's just go for the total rebuild. I think with, you know, there's another really, I don't want to say key free agent to be, but Eduardo Escobar has shown that he is a quality ball player.
Yes, yes.
And he is a free agent at the end of the year, and that's somebody who's not going to break the bank that, you know, you'd have to think the Diamondbacks have seen enough of him to say, hey, this guy might be worth keeping. But in terms of Pollock and Corbin, it's going to be more difficult because they're probably going to get big-time paydays. And if you're an organization and you step back and say, if we can only keep one of these, who would it be? As much as Pollock has, you know, when he's healthy, he's been a very, very productive player, I think you always have to look at pitching. And Corbin looks the piece that, you know, maybe he's not a number one, but he certainly falls into that number two or number three category. He takes the ball every 5 days. He gives you quality outings almost every time he takes the field. And it is really difficult, as we've seen, as all of baseball sees, to find guys that can do that. Now, it's going to be expensive, but if you're going to invest, that might be the route to go. And, hey, look, all you got to do is go back 1 year and say, okay, if the D-backs had just ponied up a little bit more for a guy like J.D. Martinez, yeah, where would they be right now?
Right.
Where would they be? And you hate to go back and say, gosh, we should have kicked in the extra $20 million, whatever it was that they were apart with J.D. and said it would be worth it. And I think Patrick Corbin might be that guy as well, where if you don't get him, you might be sitting here a year from now, Jeff, you and I having the same conversation saying they should have kept Corbin.
But, and let me play this out a little step further. You mentioned Escobar. There has been some chatter that if they were to go after Escobar and get him on a deal for however many years, that makes Jake Lamb expendable. You put Jake Lamb out on the market, you can probably get some prospects coming back. The free agents you lose, you get compensatory draft picks. They're not going to be, you know, number one, number two. But any draft pick is going to help an organization that doesn't have much of a farm system. You can almost, in a way, do the rebuild, but keep the 25-man fairly competitive.
I think there is a path to that logic. I don't doubt that at all. And Mike Hazen is a really smart guy. He's come here and done, I think, an exceptional job in the few years he's been here. And I absolutely can see that happening. Jake Lamb, he's still under control. You may have to get him healthy in order to get a bigger return in a possible trade. Although, I've talked to people, to managers and GMs and other teams. They really like Jake Lamb. They think he is one hell of a baseball player. So I just don't know, because of the shoulder injury, if other teams – well, we know that other teams would be saying, well, he's hurt. We can't give you what you think he's worth. So they may have to wait for him to get healthy and show that he's back to 100% before you can get the type of return that you should for a guy like Jake Lamb.
All right, in our remaining minutes, let's go big picture with things in baseball in general. And we're getting close to that time of year, obviously, with the end of the regular season, that teams start making changes either in the front office or in the dugout. And I look around baseball, Pedro, and there's a lot of potential managers on the hot seat in the National League. But then you look at the American League, and the team that jumps out at me, and this hurts because we both know him and we both like him, but I wonder how shaky things are for Jerry DePoto in Seattle.
You know, I know why you're asking the question. The thing is that they just re-signed him.
That's right. You're right. I'd forgotten about that. I apologize.
Four-year extension.
You're right. That's my bad.
I'm talking about like 2 months ago. Yeah, Jeff. So I think that Jerry is okay, because you're not going to fire a guy you just signed for a four-year extension.
You're right. Let's turn it, and I had forgotten about that, and I apologize.
Yeah.
Let's turn it to other clubs. I got to be honest, Pedro. I know they've had injuries, and they've had a lot of them. But the Dodgers, to me, I'm just not impressed with the way Dave Roberts handles a game, manages a game. And he makes a lot of moves within a game. I think he's burned out Kenley Jansen. I think they use him in way too many 4-5-out save situations, or putting him in 4-run leads where there's no save. And I'm not saying that's the whole reason you got to make a change. But aside from the injuries, if I'm Andrew Friedman, I'm looking down at the dugout and thinking, have I really got the right guy to manage this team going forward?
Yeah, I mean, he is a very, very well-liked manager inside that clubhouse. So he definitely has that going for him. But what I could see is Andrew Friedman saying, okay, you get to stay, but we're giving you a new bench coach. We're giving you somebody that we think is going to help you make the right decisions, because the Dodgers are one of those organizations that they're not alone in this, but they're the ones that send down the lineup at noon or 1 p.m. to the
right
manager and say, here's today's lineup. Here's what we want you to do if this situation arises. If Rich Hill goes through the lineup twice, get him out of there, get the bullpen in, because our data shows that the third time through, he struggles. And we saw that in the World Series when Rich Hill was coasting through a game, but he had gone through the Astros lineup twice, and inexplicably, he was taken out of the game.
Exactly.
And so the Dodgers use their formulaic metrics to run a game, and they want a manager that is going to do what they want, not what the manager wants. This is no longer the 1970s or 80s or 60s,
yeah,
whatever, where the manager runs the game. In a lot of ways, and like I said, the Dodgers are not exclusive to that. Virtually every ball club now has the front office with already the predetermined moves that are going to be made.
Right.
So maybe it's as easy as just saying, look, Dave, you get to stay, but we're going to want someone next to you that we want next to you.
Okay, I'm up against a break, so I'm going to ask this in just 10 seconds. Tied to that, how much does Torrey Lovullo miss Ron Gardenhire?
Oh, Gardenhire learned from Tom Kelly, the legendary Twins manager. Gardenhire is a fantastic manager. I think he misses him greatly.
Yeah, and I think
at
it's...
At least the front office misses him greatly.
And I think it shows. And that's no disrespect to Jerry Nerin. Pedro, we could go on for hours. I think we both agree. Jerry Nerin's a tremendous guy, and this is no shot at him. Pedro, I appreciate it. Wish we had more time. We'll catch up soon, my friend.
All right, Jeff. Take care, brother.
You got it. Pedro Gomez, ESPN MLB Insider, talking baseball. When we come back, I'm going to shift back to football a little bit. We are going to mention somebody in the basketball world that passed away yesterday, but I also want to talk about something Herm Edwards and Rocky Long have both said about the state of football. We'll get to it after a break on the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com. On this Thursday, Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmatt. Thank you for joining us at sports360az.com. Big weekend of high school football coming. Stay right at this website. You'll get everything you need to know. Wanted to mention very briefly, we got word yesterday of the passing of a gentleman who, to many of you, you may not remember the name Don Newman. But he had served as an assistant coach in the NBA for a number of years, lost his battle with cancer. We believe it was on Tuesday night. The San Antonio papers reported yesterday, a little vague about the timeline of everything, but Don Newman has passed away. Don Newman, among other things, played football in the CFL, but he went on to a college basketball coaching career, was a head coach at Sacramento State for 4 years, and 5 years, I should say, and then signed on as an assistant coach at Arizona State under Bill Frieder. Months after he signed on to replace the retired George McCorn, Frieder resigned. There had been a number of problems and scandals within the program, and Frieder stepped down, and Don Newman served as the interim head coach for the 97-98 season. The Devils went 18-14 that year, tied for fifth in the Pac-10, got to the NIT, and a lot of people, both in the media and among students and fans, really wanted Don Newman to get the job permanently. He did not. Kevin White, the AD, chose to hire Rob Evans to take over the program in 1998. Don Newman went on to a lengthy college or NBA assistant coaching career, first with the Milwaukee Bucks, then the New Jersey Nets and San Antonio, and most recently with the Washington Wizards. Nice man, was very popular for very good reason. Among those who were at ASU at the time, I communicated a bit with our friend Doug Tamaro last night, and he said the same thing, just a very, very popular man and a good man. And we extend our thoughts and prayers to his family and friends on the passing or the word of the passing of Don Newman. Now, on to the subject of football. I thought among the things Herm Edwards said, and I think one of the other things that the public and the media is learning about Herm Edwards is that this is a guy that's got his feet on the ground. He's very steady. You're not going to walk into press conferences and get "you play to win the game" in the press conferences. He said something at the end of his press conference Monday that I thought, and I know it got some play apparently on a couple of sites, but it hasn't been talked about a lot. And a reporter asked him, okay, you've coached two games now in college football. And Eric, feel free to jump in on this if you want. He said, the reporter asked him, what's the difference between pro and college football? Herm's take on this, and I thought it was very interesting. He said, to me, college coaches are all about score, 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 score. They want as many possessions as they can get. They want to score as many times as they can. And he said, I think in some ways, for some of them, that's where they lose control of the game. And he was speaking in terms of clock management. And I thought that was a really interesting take and one I had not heard because a lot of people commented on the way Herm Edwards managed the clock in the final possession against Michigan State. They got the ball back with just under 5 minutes to go and ran the clock down to, I think there was 4 seconds when Brandon Reese kicked the game-winning field goal. And among other things, Herm said that his offensive coordinator, Rob Likens, very badly wanted to score a touchdown on that last possession. Once Michigan State ran out of timeouts, Herm said, no, we're not going to go for the touchdown. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a knee 3 times, drain as much time as we can off the clock, and we'll send Brandon out to kick the field goal.
Which really, Mon, the more I think about it, is a very NFL way of thinking.
It is.
The college game is more designed, like you said, for scoring.
Yeah.
And it's almost like we need to score, and then we'll figure out what happens next. he completely took his foot off the gas and said, no. He played the timeouts perfectly because it got to the point where Michigan State was basically at the mercy of what ASU was going to do, and that's
right.
Got to be the most powerful spot for a head coach in college.
Right. And once they ran out of timeouts, they just had to stand there and watch ASU win the football game.
Yep.
Now, Rocky Long, the head coach of San Diego State, said something somewhat similar in his press conference on Tuesday. He said the game of football has gotten to the point, and he wasn't specifying college or pro, where defenses are powerless. He said they've obviously implemented new rules to increase the safety, but in doing so, they've taken away the defense's ability to do anything to stop the offense. And he said it's really frustrating, and Rocky Long is a defensive coach at heart, to say, and so is Herm Edwards, it's really frustrating to play the game of football right now because it's all leaning toward the offense. Now, Eric and I both have roots going back to the Arizona Rattlers when they started here in arena football. And I'll just ask you the question, Eric. Don't you think the way the game of football is played today, as much as people made fun of arena football when the Rattlers started, what's going on right now is arena football.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. Spread offenses plus really, really, really advantageous situations for wide receivers versus cornerbacks equals chunk plays, equals big plays, equals lots of scoring. I mean, cornerback is probably the hardest position to play. I mean, you can't.
Yeah. Herm Edwards has said that too.
You can play perfect coverage, but if you throw up your forearm after 5 yards, it's a penalty. If the guy gets past you and you even hook them a little bit, it's a penalty. If you go for a ball and the wide receiver goes for a ball and the ball is underthrown 99 out of 100 times, if you don't play that ball perfectly as a corner, it's going to be PI.
Right. And
if the pass is 15 yards underthrown,
right.
We see it every week. Like, the receiver slows down, the corner's running stride for stride, bumps him, the receiver sort of makes a play to at least make it look like he's being impeded, and boom, flag.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. Saturday night, now there was a lot of offense in that game in terms of yardage. Both teams got over 400 yards of total offense. You were at the game, E. Did you find that game to be thoroughly entertaining?
I did.
And yet it ended up 16-13.
But it was a good low-scoring game.
Right.
It wasn't like last Thursday's NFL game. Just because
right.
it, just
one, two,
because
three
it
punt,
was
one,
just,
two,
because,
three
and just because it was a close
yeah.
game doesn't mean it was a good game.
But
just because of a low scoring game doesn't mean it was a competitive game. It was a bad game. But Michigan State ASU was a good game.
I get the sense, and we got to get to a break in a minute. I get the sense that the pendulum in football is kind of swinging back toward people are kind of tired of the 48-40 game, and we're going to see defense. I'm not saying the NFL is going to alter the rules to make it a defensive game, but I think the pendulum is swinging back where the defense is starting to figure out ways to get around all these impediments and turn it back into less than the arena football type of game we've seen in the last at the pro and college level.
Right.
So, and I hope so, because I'm with you. I found that game to be entertaining, and there's a lot of offensive shootouts that aren't. So we'll see. Bill Gutekunst is up next. We'll talk about a really haunting movie. And boy, is that Monday Night Football crew bad. We'll discuss it next with Goody, next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. This intro music is not because we're talking movies. It's because Bill Gutekunst demands this kind of fanfare when he comes on the show. And on this Thursday, it is time to, as Brad says, get a life or get to interest in some things outside of sports. And AZ Central and Gannett chief film and media critic Bill Gutekunst joins us. I want to get to the movie that we're going to talk about right away, because I found Bisbee 17. At first I thought, oh, wow, a historical documentary. And then about 10 seconds later, I thought, oh, no, it's not a historical documentary. This thing's pretty, it's dark, to be honest about it.
It is, and it sort of is a documentary, and it sort of isn't. It's a really interesting movie, and it's what it is, and I've been told since my review went online that the Arizona students, some of them have to learn this, but I'd never heard it. And in 1917, I mean, Bisbee obviously was, now you think of it as this cool kind of arts community, and you go have a beer at the Copper Queen or whatever. But it used to be a huge mining town when, you know, copper was big. And in 1917, they tried to unionize, and they just, the copper companies came, rounded up 1,300 people, put them on a train, and dropped them off in New Mexico and said, if you come back, we'll kill you. And that was it. It's called The Deportation of 1917. And what this movie does is it talks about that. It tells you all about that. But at the same time, it's a documentary about how they're making for the 100th anniversary of it, they put on kind of a reenactment. And it turns out to be like this really gripping thing. I mean, like everybody, some people didn't know about it. Some people, their brothers were arresting brothers. It was just, it's really good and really interesting. But as you say, a little bit on the dark side.
Yeah, and it's the actual title of the film is Bisbee 17, and it I was struck by, and you can just tell this in the trailer, of just how gritty a film this is. And if you go to it, and certainly, you know, if you're into those kind of things, you recommend it. But at the same time, it just shakes you up a little bit.
But it does, but in a good way, I think. I think it's in a good way, and it has a lot to do with communities and stuff, and how they see each, how you see yourself, and how you see your community, and maybe you don't quite have the right idea, you know, and it may not be exactly what you thought it was, and that can be good or bad. But it's a good movie. It may not be a good time at the movies necessarily, but it is a good movie.
But there's nothing wrong with an experience like that. Okay, there's a couple of things I want to hopscotch to before I get to the thing that you and I both agree on. Number one, I just got to do this a little trivia real quick because it's ironic. You're on last Thursday, and then an hour later came the word that Burt Reynolds had passed away. Here's your trivia. Burt Reynolds, I found this out last Thursday when the news broke of his passing, turned down a role that Adam West had also been offered and turned down.
Oh, shoot.
I'm not going to make you stew about it for too very long, but it basically, he was offered the role as a British spy.
Oh, James Bond.
Burt Reynolds was offered the lead role as James Bond in Diamonds Are Forever. He turned it down. I don't know why Sean Connery he eventually came back and did Bond again. But Reynolds turned it down, supposedly for the same reason Adam West turned down James Bond. They both said James Bond should always be British.
I have to agree.
Yeah, and I just thought ironic. And if we have time, I'm going to ask you one more question about Burt Reynolds. But I'll know that you had a chance to talk to Ethan Hawke recently.
I did, and he is a good guy. He's having, as they say, he's having a moment. He stars in what's so far been, and probably most people would think of it probably as the best movie of the year, which is a First Reformed, Paul Schrader's movie. He plays a minister who has kind of a crisis of faith. He's great. It's one of those things that's like just perfect for him. And then he also is in the movie Juliet Naked, which is kind of a romantic comedy, and he's good in that. And he's directing a movie called Blaze, which is about a sort of a little-known singer, songwriter, country, western guy. And it's not a documentary. I mean, it's a dramatic recreation of it, but he directed that. So he's got, you know, he's as I talked to him about it, I said, you know, you're having a pretty good year so far, you know.
And it's interesting how these the actors that we know so well, they kind of morph into directorial roles. And I guess, you know, among the more famous, Clint Eastwood, Ron Howard, Jodie Foster. But there is a fascination among actors with getting behind the camera and putting a film together, isn't there?
Yes. And I think that, you know, some of them, you talk to some of them, they say they have no interest in it. They just want to do their thing. They want to act. But I think that a lot of times, if you're around it a lot, and you sort of start to see the way that the director sees, you know, and you start to think the way the director thinks, and you think, maybe I can do that. And sometimes they get it there, and they realize they can't. And sometimes they do, and they can. Now, this movie, Blaze, it's quite good. It opens next week, but it's very slow, and it's pretty depressing in some places. but it's really well made. And then he's written novels and stuff. He's sort of a all-around guy, and he's very friendly. Like, he's one of the – sometimes you talk to these people, and you know this in doing sports for so long. Same with athletes and coaches. Some of them, they just kind of give you the answer that they give everybody. And some of them, you know, they really hear you, and they really hear your question, and they really consider it. And that's sort of how this was.
Well, that had to be fun for you, because that makes it easier on the interviewer. You mentioned sports. That gives me the opening to transition into something that I think you and I both agree with. And we watched Monday Night Football. I'm not talking about Beth Mowins and Brian Griese, who I thought were pretty good. The main team, Joe Tessitore, Jason Witten, I'll get to Booger McFarlane in a second. I think it's terribly unfair of ESPN to put a guy like Witten with no TV experience on a national package. It's one thing, and I know CBS did it with Tony Romo. I don't think Romo's that good. But Witten, they did a stand-up at halftime of the Jets-Lions game. I don't know if you saw it, Bill. But Jason Witten looked like one of those characters at Disneyland in Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. He looked so stiff and so robotic. And the funny thing was, he stared straight at Tessitore's forehead. And it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't blame Witten. I blame the people that put him there.
Well, and, you know, you don't like Romo. I like Romo, okay, but some people love him. Some people think he's great. But at least what they did with Romo was they gave him, like, the whole summer, you know, to go work with Jim Nance and to sort of practice. And not that Witten didn't practice, but it did not get the idea that it was as intensive a thing for that. And the thing that's too bad is I've heard him on some radio shows lately, like in the last week since his debut. And he's good in that role. I mean, he knows football. He knows that stuff. I don't know. It's just a different thing when you're sitting there. And I'm sure you have too. I've talked to a lot of those Monday night guys. And that, for whatever reason, that broadcast in particular changes people. I didn't think Mike Tirico was that good at it. And I think he's a really good broadcaster.
Yeah.
But I thought he was so overwhelmed by the fact that I'm hosting Monday Night Football, you know, I'm the play-by-play guy, that I thought he was stiff. He wasn't as good as he usually is. I don't know what it is. I mean, I think everybody's trying to find, it wasn't the original group, but everybody's trying to sort of live in the shadow, you know, of Gifford and Cosell and Meredith. And that, you know,
well,
they
I have a theory about that. But let me ask you another question, and this is a little bit inside baseball in terms of the industry. ESPN does not have the greatest relationship, or hasn't, with the NFL for several years. I think they've got a couple years left on the Monday night deal. Given the ratings performance, not the football performance, but given the ratings performance of Thursday nights, and Fox is paying a gargantuan amount of money for Thursday night football, when the ESPN deal is up, what would prevent Fox from saying, look, we don't know why Monday Night Football ended up on cable, but we'll put it back on broadcast television? Because it appears, Bill, that you can put two guys sitting at a card table playing canasta, and if you put an NFL logo on it, it'll get a 12 share.
Absolutely nothing prevents it. Those things we all like to think of. I mean, an ESPN and ABC are both Disney properties, and I'm sure that had something to do with it. And Sunday Night Football was going to become the marquee game of the week, and there was just no stopping that. But all those things are up for grabs. So we like to think of, oh, you know, Monday Night Football was on ABC so long, you think of a thing. People don't think that. For one thing, people don't think that way anymore. My kids don't know what a TV network is. They stream everything.
Right.
There's no such thing as a show that comes on at 8 anymore for anybody. But the other thing is that the answer to every question in television eventually is money. And it's whoever's going to pay the biggest amount of money. Whoever pays the most is going to get Monday Night Football. And if they want to put it on, you know, they'll have to work some stuff out, but they'll do it. Because you're right. I mean, it's a ratings machine, and Now, I'll say this. They'll probably overpay for it. But what happened, like, with CBS, when they finally got football again after having lost it, it's sort of the rising tide that floats all boats. It helped improve their Sunday night programming. They got to promote from football
right
to other shows. So it helps in other ways, too.
Yeah, and absolutely. I've got 30 seconds. I want to go back to Burt Reynolds for a second. The people will say Deliverance was his most significant movie. I still think it's The Longest Yard, because that movie showed a really gritty depiction of life in a prison.
I like them both. I love Deliverance. I think Deliverance is probably better. I'm good. But you know, and Boogie Nights is great. It's not his movie.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
He got nominated for an Oscar for it.
Yeah, and
but
I.
He, just a cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's ironic. I'll just say this in closing. He wanted so badly to be respected by the Hollywood community, and he did get an Oscar nomination at the end of his career. But to me, he provided, especially in the 70s, at the height of his popularity, provided people who went to the movies an escape. And they laughed, and they thought. And I think to myself, well, isn't that too what an actor's supposed to do?
I also believe that he must have been soothed at least a little bit by the truckloads of money that arrived at his house every time he made a movie.
Yeah,
probably. He was the biggest. People don't realize that, I think, sometimes. He was the biggest box star of the 70s. I mean, box office star. He was huge. And somehow people don't quite remember how big he was, but he was a giant.
He was phenomenal, and his movies were fun. Bill, I appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Thank you, sir. Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central Chief Film Gannett, Chief Film and Media Critic, with his review of Bisbee 17, which is just hitting theaters, and one that if you're into really gritty, kind of grab your attention dramas, is worth seeing. You know what's worth seeing here? High school results, wrap-ups of the college and pro football weekend. You get it all here at sports360az.com, and you get the Brad Sesmatch Show, too. So why would you go anywhere else? Stay with us right here, and stick with us for the Brad Sesmatch Show.